This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 429 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me via Skype from the other end of the country, from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Have we started?
We have started, yes, mate. What's happening?
Then hello, everybody. Sorry, I was just sending a funny meme to my wife.
Oh, okay.
What's been happening? Well, it's been 2 weeks since we talked.
It has.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster. I couldn't do last episode. My poor dear wife got made redundant.
I know.
That afternoon.
That's crap.
And she was somewhat, well, she was pretty upset.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd better do the right thing and not disappear into the bedroom for an hour by myself.
Yeah. You know,
and hang around and chat.
It certainly does feel like a kick in the guts when it happens. I'll give her that.
Yes, I don't know. So, yeah, it's the first time it's ever happened to her.
Yep.
I mean,
did she see it coming? Like, was it something that was expected?
First of all, she works in the finance industry,
yep.
Right? In the investment finance industry. And after the Banking Royal Commission, the entire industry is completely screwed, basically.
Right.
Yep. I mean, no one can function anymore, and the rules they're bringing in means everyone's pretty much giving up and just quitting the business.
Right.
So, yeah, seriously, it's like financial planners, mortgage brokers, everyone, they can't function in business anymore. They can't do – she's got friends who have had their job for 30 years.
Right.
Doing the role they're doing for 30 years, who's – they're no longer qualified to do their job as of June 30 because the government's changing what is required to do the job.
Right.
The qualifications, they've got to go do a modern four-year degree to continue doing the job they're doing. And, of course, how many of them are going to do that?
That seems a bit strange that they would implement.
We're talking heads of companies. We're talking heads of major companies and will no longer be qualified to do their job.
But how can you bring in something with 4 months' notice and say you now need a four-year degree?
Oh, they'll say you must have completed by such and such time or whatever. You must have started. But these people are going, well, yeah, I'm 57, I'm 58, I'm 60 or whatever. I'm not going to go do a four-year degree. I'll just close my entire company down and sack hundreds of people.
Yeah, right.
Because there's no point anymore is going forward. And they've made it impossible. Say as if you're a financial advisor and someone comes to you and you're managing funds for someone.
Yeah.
And then you get this deal to put your funds into another company that's going to do much better for these people. This is all theoretical. I'm not talking about any particular companies.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible for the financial advisor to recommend that to a client.
Yeah, right.
Because to move anything now is like a four-step process that could take about 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
As in you've got to get forms, and you've got to get the you've got to meet with the client, go to the company, meet with the company, get the forms, meet with the client, get the client to sign certain forms, go back to the company, hand those forms in, get the new forms from the new company, meet with the client, sign the forms.
Yeah.
Go back to the old company, say we need to transfer this to here, go meet with the client, get them to sign that form, then move the funds over. Once the funds are moved over, meet with the client, sign the forms.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's gone from what was a simple process to – so the entire industry is just completely befuddled.
Yeah.
And as such, no one's doing anything.
As much as I feel for people like your wife and, you know, the legitimate people within the industry, I do feel that it was long overdue that the banks came in for a severe caning.
Oh, look, absolutely. I'm saying I don't think there's any innocent – well, I'm not saying there's no innocent parties, but every area of the finance industry, there's shonky people, as there are in most industries.
Yeah.
But any time it's to do with money and commissions,
there's
going to be some people doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be – yeah, it shouldn't – you can't kill off an industry because of a few bad apples.
Yeah.
No. You know, you should be able to find a way to and quite frankly, if the government and its bodies that monitor these things had been doing their job properly in the first place,
exactly,
none of this would have happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Simple thing that they should be monitoring and making sure stuff doesn't go wrong.
Yeah.
As simple as that. That would at least minimise the amount of people.
Well, the photographic upshot of all of this, Glyn, is that there'll be lots of people looking for new corporate headshots. No.
Yeah.
Look on the bright side. There'll be some work out there. No, not really.
You've rendered me speechless. Yeah. So anyway, so basically 10% of her company's workforce lost their job.
Ouch.
The state manager of her company was basically crying when he found, because she sort of reports to a different division, a national division rather than the Victorian division, but he was basically crying when he found out she had to go.
Yeah, right.
There's almost protests. There's almost protests from the organisation. We can understand these people, but not that one. Anyway, it took a few days for her to go through that emotional roller coaster of this. I kind of knew she was on the mend a bit.
Yep.
When I smelt something a bit funny on Sunday afternoon. So this happened on Thursday.
Right.
Sunday afternoon, I smelt something a bit funny.
Okay.
And the backyard security camera kept going off. Bing, right. Bing, bing. Somebody's out the backyard. And then I smelt something. I looked out the back. She's started a fire in the fire pit. Yeah. And she's burning her business cards, all her work folders, all her brochures. She wasn't dancing around it, but she was taking photos as the logos were burning.
I can relate.
You can tell when you go from grief to anger.
Yep. I can relate.
Oh, dear. So the awesome thing is, though, there is people from all around Australia, big players in the industry, are calling and saying, how can I help
to
get you a job?
Awesome.
Here, contact this person. Here, contact this person. Tell this person I told you to call them. All this sort of stuff. So incredible supports come out of the woodwork for us. So it just shows the sort of, the fondness she's looked upon inside her industry, because incredible integrity. I mean, even that company who had to let her go said, we would normally make you leave right now and not be able to do any stuff like contacting, but we're going to give you free rein to contact people, to access you can keep your company car for a couple of weeks, all this stuff because of your integrity. So it's all stuff that is above and beyond. So it's a bit of a transition. The worst thing is she just said yes to go on with a friend of ours to Santorini to, funnily enough, help shoot a wedding.
Oh, right.
Mostly to carry the bags and have a holiday, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, right.
And, of course, now because of this uncertainty, she's had to say no. So she's gutted about Santorini more than a job, I think.
She should just go. I mean, she's got the time on her hands.
Yeah, but the problem is everyone says that. And says, but if you're out of the industry, you get forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to get out and she wants to get a job straight away, And then she can worry about holidays and stuff like that. She's her personality type is she's got to be in control. And not having a job is having no control.
When's the Santorini trip?
Well, it's August. So it's still a potential chance.
She could land a job before then and just say, I've already got this thing planned.
Well, that's what I'm sort of telling her to do. So
live a little cat.
We'll see what comes of it all anyway.
Yeah.
So how has your 2 weeks been?
Rather eventful.
Really?
In terms of photography,
Really?
Well, I shot the Mardi Gras.
Oh, that's right. You did. We're going to talk about those, don't we?
Yeah, and then last weekend I went out on Saturday night and did some astrophotography down at the Skillion at Terrigal. Because I felt like...
Just for anyone who's got a brain, what's a Skillion?
The Skillion is the name of this particular headland.
See, that's the information that would have been handy, Bruce?
Yes and no. It's just...
We're a worldwide podcast, Bruce.
I realise that, but it was not overly important in the context of the story, other than that I used
it. It could have been a building. It could have been an astronomical observatory. I didn't know what it was.
Okay, fair enough.
I need information. I'm a control freak, Bruce. Okay. And everyone else has gone out there. They're all applauding me right now, Bruce. So, just before we get onto that, I know you had some internet issues today.
Yes.
And you asked me if I could record my voice on my computer and then send you the recording file.
That's correct.
I was so looking forward to doing that.
Oh.
Until you said, I'll talk to you on the phone and you just record your voice.
Right.
Because I was just going to just record a one-sided monologue sent to you that you would then have to fill in your bits.
Yeah. That would have been fine.
No, because that'd be doing stuff. Oh, Bruce, that's so kind of you to say that about me. Say it again, Bruce. What did you really mean? And I was going to stuff you up. Left, right, and center, with all sorts of stuff. Bruce, that's racist. How can you say that? I was going to give you the hardest possible podcast to record in your life. Damn you, internet, for getting fixed.
Yeah.
And before we go on to your trip, see, Facebook and Instagram were down partly today.
I know, all day today.
And did you see people were calling the emergency services?
Oh, idiots.
Because Facebook was down. Seriously, our state emergency service was inundated.
Yeah.
Triple O, our emergency inundated with people calling because Facebook was down.
Yeah, ridiculous.
I've just posted on my Facebook that I've taken myself safe from the Facebook crash.
Yes, I saw a couple of people had done that.
So that's good. That's good. Yeah.
I saw a tweet. There's a parody account called Bored Elon Musk. So it's just a parody Elon Musk account. And one of the tweets was, wondering why a worldwide productivity is up 30% today.
That's it. someone just put on my Facebook, in 20 years from now, we'll be sitting on a beer remembering where we were the day Facebook crashed.
Yes.
That's special, those big moments in life. Yeah, you remember where you are. Like that.
That's it.
So you went to the Sky Bus, the Scoogle.
The Skillion.
That's the one.
Yeah.
You went down to the beach. You went down to a headland.
Yes. What you need to see is, you need to see it in daytime. What I'll do is I'll post a
it's not very good for Astro, Bruce.
Daytime. No, it's not very good for Astro. That's correct. But I'll post a daytime shot of it in the show notes for this episode so people can see what it looks like in the daytime. Because you've got this massive headland that is quite a steep cliff off, you know, both sides of it and off the front end of it that faces out to sea, but it has quite a nice gradient up the landward side, so it's quite easy to walk up to the top of it, and then you've got this beautiful, you know, elevated position overlooking the ocean with a 360-degree view. But on the northern side of the Skillion, you've got this quite flat rock plateau over which the waves are constantly crashing at high tide. At low tide, they don't quite come over it. So at different times on the tide, you get quite, you know, interesting wave crashes happening over the rocks and all that sort of stuff, none of which was happening whilst I was down there on Saturday night, and I really wasn't looking at the waves anyway. I was trying to shoot the Milky Way. But I positioned myself in such a way as to try and block the one solitary streetlight, which is right up on top of the Skillion, with a large boulder that was down close to where I was sitting, to try and get that light out of the shot, and then just frame the shot to shoot the Milky Way and the ocean and all the rocks in the foreground.
Have you posted any of those on social media?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
On your
Bruce Williams?
Just on my personal Facebook.
Hey, you work for ABC Australia. Look at that.
I do.
I didn't know that.
It really is true. You don't listen to a word I say.
What?
Exactly.
Oh, there they are. Look at that. Okay, the light thing. I thought that was you with the torch.
So it looks like a headlight of a car or something up on the top of the hill, but it's actually just a single solitary, you know, street light on a pole. And so I had to try and manoeuvre myself into a position where I blocked that from the shot.
But it just looks like those people that do these shots with the Milky Way when they stand there with the torch shining in the sky.
Yeah.
Seen all those photos?
Yep.
You're just a trend follower, Bruce. That's all it is.
That's me, mate. That's me. So I've got to say...
Well, that looked good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I was sceptical. I was nervous. I was anxious.
You were unsure?
I was unsure about going the route of buying a manual focus lens.
Yeah.
And I only went that route because I knew the camera body had focus peaking and that would help me achieve focus.
Got to focus on the stars.
But what I've come to know and love after last Saturday night is that with a manual focus lens, you can turn the camera off and you can come back to it and turn the camera back on, and the point of focus hasn't moved.
Gee, Bruce, you just realised this, have you?
It's like a dog with no legs. It's exactly where you left it.
Let me tell you this weird thing too, though, Bruce. You're gonna fall off your chair with this.
Right.
If you're shooting with a digital SLR with an autofocus lens, and you put it on a manual focus, and turn the camera off to the back, same.
No, not the Sony.
Yes.
No, not the Sony.
Sony's.
No.
Sony no more.
When I would turn on my A850, it would immediately set the focal point to infinity.
I'm talking about good cameras.
On an AF lens. So if you had focused on something that was closer than infinity, if you turn the camera off and then turn it back on, you would lose that focus point because the lens would do this whole zzz, zzz, and, you know, end up at infinity.
And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it used to frustrate the crap out of me.
I can imagine. There's another tip, of course. Don't turn your camera off.
Well, sometimes you had reason for wanting to do that.
Like?
So anyway, so yeah. So
I want to hear an example now. Give me an example where that would be a scenario.
I'm out shooting.
I'm shooting Astro. I'm shooting away. I'm having a good time. Oh, no, I'll just turn the camera on and off.
It was probably because I was going to do something that was going to take a few minutes. And so rather than turn the camera off, you've just raised the point. The camera, like, you know how you have a self
goes to sleep
time frame? Yeah. My 850, I used to have that set to 1 minute because I figured if I'm not doing anything within 1 minute, it might as well go to sleep. And the problem was, even if you woke it up from a sleep mode without having switched it off, that would reset the focal point of the lens as well.
You could have turned off the sleep mode.
You could have done that. You could have done that. Yeah.
But no, that's a pain. I mean, most like a Canon or a Nikon, possibly because I don't know, it was with an autofocus, manual focus switch on the lens or on the camera?
No, just on the camera body.
Yeah, so maybe it's because it's on the lens on those cameras.
Right, yes. Canon, that would make sense. With that switch, you would then be able to disengage the electronics for the AF.
But yeah. There's certainly a big advantage. There's a lot of fun with using manual focus, be it. Mm. Yeah, you know, in traditional cameras, all these new Lauers, and it was a Lauer lens. You have,
yes.
Yep. So I mean, your second one, you've got two shots up there. The first one, the darker one's quite good.
Right. So the first one was 30 seconds at f4 or f5.6.
Yeah.
And then the second one, I shut down to about f11, and I left it open for 2.5 minutes, which is why you've got a little bit of star trail movement.
And that's the problem. To my eye, a little bit of star trail sucks.
Yeah. You either want none or a lot.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Because you kind of want it to look deliberate.
Yeah.
And a little bit looks like you've just cocked up the exposure. And of course, then it doesn't look like it's in focus.
Yeah.
And it certainly shows the noise a lot more too, doesn't it? The lighter one.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it does.
Significantly more noise in the shot. What kind of ISO, sorry, are you shooting at?
12,800.
On both?
Yep.
On both?
Yep, both at 12,800.
I was about to say 100. It's like, yeah, bullshit. No. I like the first one. I think the first one's got more character as well anyway.
Okay.
I think the darker shot's got a bit more character to it.
Yep, cool.
Good. So you've done the Mardi Gras. We have to go back to your Mardi Gras shots.
Yeah. That was interesting. Again, I took your recommendation of going with the 15mm.
You're a clever man.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what I did because I wasn't 100% convinced. I decided to take the backpack with me.
And of course you did.
I left the 28-70 at home and I took the 70-200 with me. And
I would have gone still.
I did put the 70-200 on for about 10 minutes and just went, nah, this isn't going to work at all. And
explain why though. Why wasn't it going to work?
Okay. You're basically on the side of Oxford Street, and which side is irrelevant, but basically you're mashed in with a crowd of thousands of people. Like, I think they said there was something like 300,000 people turned out to watch the parade. So you're in amongst this, you know, seething, you know, mass of humanity. So I put the 70-200 on in the hopes that I might be able to either squeeze through to the front or, you know, hold my camera up high and get some shots of the floats going by. And it really just wasn't working because people were standing on milk crates and whatever. So you couldn't get through and you couldn't reach over the top because they were already 3 feet higher than you, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so that sort of left me back to what was my original plan, which was just to shoot the characters in the crowd rather than trying to shoot the parade itself.
Yeah.
So after about 10 minutes, I went, this isn't going to work with the 70-200. So I, you know, swapped back to the 15. And that was challenging because what I came to realize, having never been in this situation before, is that as good as focus peaking is, it really only works if the scene is bright enough for the autofocus characteristics of the body to to recognize points of focus. If things are so...
And if it's static enough.
Well, yeah, right. And if
moving subjects aren't easy to focus peak on because they move before you get the focus. And if you hit focus, they might move out of focus. It's not a good
So I found that, you know, in the times when I was in a better lit area and I had someone in front of me who was posing for me, it wasn't so bad. But if I was trying to get...
So when you have control. As soon as you have control,
but
it's okay.
The candid stuff was a lot harder to do, so...
As it would be. I mean, I would never attempt it.
Right. With a manual focus lens.
Yeah, never attempt it. I shoot 15mm wide all the time, but I rely on autofocus to do its job for me.
Yep.
Knowing that depth of field is not, you know, focusing is not critically important because the depth of field of 15mm is so big anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it focuses on a chest, as an example, I'm going to be pretty much sure the eyes and the head and the face is going to be in focus because it's all, you know, pretty close to, you know, the same depth-wise.
Yeah.
But how did you find the feel of the photos? Forget about the technical difficulties of doing it. What was the feel like having that really wide lens?
I thought it was good because it did allow me to get close and... you know, that gave me, you know, the opportunity to interact with these people, you know, and most of them were, were quite happy to pose and some of them were, you know, you had a good
laugh. Well, there were a bunch of posers. I mean, you know, they're all there to be seen.
Exactly.
So if you want to take photographs of them, they've got to be one of the easiest crowds in the world to shoot.
Yeah.
Because they're all there to have a great time and to be noticed.
Yeah.
And if you're going to notice them with your camera, then they're very happy campers, you know. But what about the intimacy of being that close, that sort of feeling, it makes you sort of feel more like you're in the shot and, the shot has more, do you feel the shots have more impact because of your proximity?
Definitely.
Good. That's why I say that challenge.
Yeah.
That's, you know, to get that feel, which you wouldn't have, do you think, okay, if you were shooting at 50 mil or 70 mil further back, would it have felt the same?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
And I really like some of your shots. Some of your shots were really quite good.
Oh, thank you. There's a couple.
Once again,
there's a couple of shots.
It feels good. Yeah.
One was four people standing in a window, and then the next shot is the same four people, but I'm inside their art gallery. And so what happened there was these four of them, they were inside their art gallery, standing in their window, looking out onto the street, and I've come along and, you know, shot from the footpath through the window at the four of them, and they've, you know, sort of all waved at me and whatever. And what I did was I grabbed a one of my photography business cards and I held it up to the window. And the girl tried to take a photo with her phone through the window.
I think she's going to try and reach out and get the card through the window.
Of my business card. And she obviously wasn't having much luck getting a good shot of it through the glass. And so one of the guys has just sort of pointed to me to come to the door. And so, you know, I've pushed my way through the crowd up to the door of the place and he's let me in and said, come in, have a drink. And, you know so come in and got to have a good old chat with him. And, you know, just grabbed a can of Coke. They had alcohol, but I was on the motorbike, so I didn't want to drink alcohol. So I had a can of Coke and had a good laugh with them. And they said, oh, can we get a copy of the photo? And I went, yeah, absolutely, you know. And so that's why
Can I run the exhibition in your gallery?
Yeah.
Opportunity, Bruce, opportunity. It's knocking.
So, yeah, so it was good fun. And I think I would probably go and do it again next year. So,
good on you.
Yeah.
I'm really pleased you took the 15 mil.
Yeah.
Because I really think the experience you have shooting something like that that close really, it gets you into the mood, it gets you into the zone, it gets your creative juices flowing because you're so engaged with everything.
Definitely.
That it really changes things up. And if you're sitting back with a 200mm lens, A, you know, the compression, I mean, the problem is nighttime shooting, you're reasonably slower shutter speeds.
Yep.
If you're trying to shoot too big a lens, every bit of movement's going to show. It's going to be really, your percentage of good shots is going to be really low.
Yep.
And I would say if you're shooting that wide, your percentage of good shots, you know, or better shots should be quite reasonable.
Yep.
Would that be the case?
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing with your longer focal length is even if you were to try and go that route, because of the mass of humanity that is moving in all directions at all times, your chance of getting a shot without someone walking through it would be almost nil.
Yeah. We had this sort of problem up in Pushkar in the camel fair last year.
Right.
Yeah, we're setting up this camel on a hill, with a person walking as the sun's setting to get the silhouette shot. But it looks really good at 200mm lens, so you're 30 feet back, but all these Chinese photographers run and jump in front of you trying to take photos. You can't control you're out of control. You can't control the environment.
Yeah.
But if you're shooting with a 15mm and something's 5 feet in front of you, no one's getting in front of you, because
you own the space.
It's fabulous. It's so good on you. I'm really, really pleased for you that you had a good experience.
Yeah.
Now, this is... We should apologise to our listeners, of course.
Of course.
For talking photographic stuff.
Yes.
A little unlike us. I'm interested to know,
out of the, I don't know if you've got them in front of you, but was there a particular image or two that you liked out of the Mardi Gras?
I'm trying to open up on my phone and it's going really slow with your thing for
my
some reason.
My photography website or my Facebook page?
Well, your Facebook page is okay, but there's an image you put up there the other day, which I thought looked really good, and I don't see it there now, so maybe I was delusional. But then you've got – because I think originally – did you put up just images without a link to your web page?
I don't think so. I think the – because what you would have seen come through on Facebook would have been – when I post to my photography website, it automatically goes through to my Bruce Williams Photography Facebook page. So you probably...
Maybe I'm not looking at the Bruce Williams Photography, I'm just looking at Bruce Williams.
That's possible.
So but the immediate thing I liked about them straight, because it was obviously that intimacy, that closeness you were getting to the subject. I thought that was... you've really hit the brief perfectly well there as far as that was concerned. Jeez, Bruce, it's nothing but... Your photography page is nothing but dark table crap. Over and over and over. Let's see if I can find anything decent. I mean, some good stuff there. See, that photo of the TV screen's great, Bruce. That's fascinating.
I did that for you.
I don't know why you bother. You
made a whole thing about it on the podcast that we recorded before I went off to do it, and you said don't take photos on the TV. So I did that deliberately.
There you go. So the next one on from that, you've got this group of three, a guy with bunny ears. So, I mean, that's the epitome of what you expect to see gay and lesbian Mardi Gras.
This was probably the shot that I posed the most. I said to the girl, turn your back to me and the two guys get you leaning on her shoulder and
And of course, all the leading lines of the roads are nice and et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, if you're talking Mardi Gras shots, that's a great parade kind of feel. And the next one, the close up one of the girl's hips.
Oh, yeah.
And I say girls because I'm assuming. But,
yes.
then I like the one with the balloons.
Oh, yes.
Or not the light. That looks really cool.
Yep.
Yeah. The biggest problem to me is with this shot, I mean, the only thing I like about it is the balloons.
Right.
So the people I don't like at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
They spoke very highly of you, mate.
I'm sure they did, and they hardly even know. Now, the problem is, what event are you at?
Mardi Gras.
What is that? How do I get that from that image?
Yeah, you probably don't.
You can't.
Yeah.
So looking at that photo in isolation, it's four women talking. One's looking for a phone in her bag. The other three are having a chat, and one's got some balloons in her hand.
Right.
So I like the balloons. It's just the characters. Yeah, there's no story.
There's a second shot of those four girls that is a better image, which is the next image.
Well, it's a better image. It still sucks.
Yeah. Okay.
It sucks with the storyline of Mardi Gras.
What attracted me to that shot was just the balloons, because the balloons actually have lights in them.
Yeah, that's the only good thing about the whole shot. The balloons. The balloons are great.
Yeah.
You'd love to use those in a shoot. You'd love to know where you can find those and use those somewhere else. They're pretty cool. Okay, so you're one of the people in the gallery.
Yeah.
Friggin' awesome.
Oh, okay. The ones in the window or the one inside?
Well, when they're in the window and the guy's looking in.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love it. Love it, pieces. I would lighten up his face a little bit in post just so you get a little bit more of the interaction.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you could brighten that up quite a bit. I mean, you haven't done any post-production on this or bugger all post-production on this at all.
Very little.
Yeah, so I brightened up his face just to get that facial expression.
Yep.
But it's really good because it's the story. Yeah. All actors and characters. That it's all there. The champagne, the beers.
Yep.
So it's a real good funny story. Oh, they're the same. Okay, so the drink paint crate, the one we're looking down from on top. I thought you took a fairly boring background and made it interesting by shooting from on high.
Right.
That was obviously the one inside the gallery.
That is inside the gallery, yep. And what it was that pretty much right above where I was standing, they had these long lights hanging down on, you know, cable with sort of these almost like a softbox, not a softbox, like a beauty dish but without the diffuser. You know, so they were these really hard but big round lights. And when I tried to shoot them from in front or from down low, it cast shadow across their faces. And I said, oh, no, I've got to get light on your faces. So I just grabbed a chair and dragged it over and then stood up on the chair. And that did the job of at least putting some light on their faces.
I would crop that in about 20%.
Okay.
You'll find it's a much stronger image.
You saying get rid of the text up the top?
No, crop it down to just – because the problem is you've got crop it right down to just above the text. That should get rid of the garbage bin or whatever is on the right-hand side, the stuff that doesn't add to the shot.
Right.
Bring it kind of elbow, the guy on the left elbow
yep.
to the guy on the right shoulder as your crop,
yep.
and it's a much more powerful photo.
Right.
Yeah, it's just – crop by 20% will do.
Yeah.
The next one's of a guy in all looks like gold.
Yes.
Yeah. Great character.
Yes.
Could have been a really good photo. Was he posing for you?
Very briefly.
Yeah.
This was not on Oxford Street. This was walking down a one of the back streets, and it was really dark. And I had to.
You've done fine with all the lighting and stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't understand the three people walking behind him.
No. He agreed to pose, but I got the sense that he didn't want to be standing there for long, and so it was a bit of a rushed shot, which is kind of a shame. And I actually had to crop this.
He's probably your most interesting character of the night.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I had to crop this down because I shot it in a landscape orientation, and to the right, just out of where I've cropped, was a guy bending over and, you know, with his ass facing me. which I hadn't noticed because he wasn't really in the light. But when I got the images at home and, you know, brought them into Darktable, I went, oh, God, I've got to crop that out.
nothing speaks Mardi Gras like.
Anyway, that's it.
I flicked through to see if there's anything else there. It's any good. No, and that's it. So you've got a couple of good, but that one, the window. You know what? If you can go out and come home with one cracker image, you've done it. Yeah, that one, the window, I think's awesome.
Yeah. I like that shot.
Yeah. You've taken, this is what I love to see, is that you've taken some control to be, you're not doing surreptitious stuff, you've been out there, you're putting yourself on the line. Yeah, you're putting yourself on the line to get the shot physically. But emotionally, you have to be brave and stand out there to do it, and you get the rewards.
Yeah.
You know? So good on you. I'm pleased for you.
Thank you. And I certainly understand the reluctance of people who don't do this every day, and I consider myself in that group.
Absolutely.
But you are not in this group, who find it awkward to walk up to total strangers and go, hey, can I take your photo? You know, and as you say, this is probably the easiest crowd you'll find, you know, because they want to be on display.
That and places like India where they call you over to take their photo.
Yeah, right.
You know, that helps.
Yep.
You know, if people are begging to have you to take their photo, that's never going to – yeah. But here's the thing. I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I don't find anyone easy. There's not a single time walking up to a stranger to ask to take their photo is easy.
Really?
It's never easy.
Wow.
Never, ever.
Wow.
And the person – and I might go up to ask someone. They say yes. I have an awesome experience, get some great shots, turn around, see another great face. It's the same hardness to go up and say, excuse me.
Yeah, right.
But guess what? If I don't ask, guess what I don't get?
You don't get.
You know? And that's it. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
And you've got to push yourself out of your comfort zone, because if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
If you take the surreptitious shot or the quick snap, you get crap.
Yep.
Yeah, you might.
And sometimes you will antagonize people with that approach.
Absolutely. Asking people to take the photos isn't always. Yeah. But here's the thing. The more you do it.
Yeah.
And I say this when I'm taking people out, is you try and pick up a vibe on people.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If you look at someone and smile.
Yep.
And they smile back at you.
Yep. Half the battle's done.
Yeah. But if you look at someone and smile and they give you the devil's eyes.
you move
possibly
on.
Not the person to ask.
That's it.
You know? Yeah. So everywhere I walk when I'm traveling, I walk with a stupid smile on my face.
Yeah.
And I look at people.
Yeah.
And if they look and engage back,
yep.
well, straight away, even if there's a language barrier, we've got a connection straight away. And you yep. can then determine by that return of connection
yep.
as to how big it is and how and if it's worthwhile pursuing further.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
But that takes a lot of the pressure off, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it's always hard. I'm an introvert by nature. And it's hard to walk up.
I find that hard to believe.
Most of us loud people are the biggest introverts you'll come across.
Right, okay.
So it's really hard to do. But as I said, the image, getting the image outweighs my introvertness.
Right, yep.
The desire to get the photograph is stronger than my desire to
The fear of the unknown.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And as I always say to people, what's the worst someone can say? Usually it's no.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, it's not the worst thing that could happen to you.
No, at that point you just, you know, water off a duck's back, keep moving.
Yeah. And as when I do talks on this sort of stuff, I say, you know, I learned very early on in life when I was like 16 years old, if I went to an underage kind of, you know, dance, a bit of a disco,
yep.
I knew if I walked up to 10 girls and asked them to dance, if one said yes, my night was kind of made. I'm in for a good night. You know? Yeah. If it takes 20, but all it takes is one girl to say, yeah, I'll dance with you, that you're all of a sudden, yeah, things are looking up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It's not about the nine who said no anymore. It's about the one who said yes.
Yeah.
And if you can make the most of that one that says yes, if you can get one great photo from that person that says yes.
Yep.
But the biggest thing is, and this is where you've got to try not to be your own worst enemy, like the guy in gold, is if they've said yes. Yeah, they're not going to hang around forever, but take a bit longer than you think you need.
Yeah.
Than you think you've got. Yeah, take a minute, just 30 seconds to look at the problems and try and solve the problems.
Yeah.
Don't be in a rush to shoot straight away. Especially if you have any hope, any potential of giving these photos to this person, you want them to look good.
Yeah.
And if they've agreed to have their photo taken, yeah, they're already part of the process.
Well, interesting that you should mention that, because over the course of the night,
yeah.
I reckon I probably gave out about 20 or 30 business cards,
yeah.
and yeah. he was one of the people who did actually send me an email, and he said, you took my photo on Saturday night. Is there any chance I can get a copy of it? And, of course, he had this weird name that I couldn't even tell if the name was a guy or a girl, and yeah. I had to yeah. say, can you tell me which...
Not exactly wrong with that.
Yeah, and so I had to say to him, look, here's all the photos. If you can see your photo, you know, tell me which one it is. And he then came back and said, oh, I'm the guy in the gold suit in the back alley. Yeah. And I went, all right, okay, no worries. Yeah. So I sent him the version of the image as it appears on my blog. He then sent me back an email and he said, oh, thanks for that. He said, is there any chance I can see the untouched version? And I went, yeah, absolutely, but you'll see why I cropped it. You know?
Why I touched it.
And he wrote back with a LOL and went, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so what we've got to do in these situations is try and remove our own discomfort.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were feeling awkward. It was a back lane way. It wasn't out there. It was, this guy's heading somewhere. I've stopped him. All these things that are going through your head yeah. that make you rush the shot.
Do you know what else I think was going on was that I was aware that there was another group of people walking in the same direction as he was, and they were about 10 or 15 meters away and closing in, and I was conscious of trying to get the shot before they sort of came into my field.
It's tricky. Yeah, you're never going to win them all.
Yeah.
But where possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you could have waited 0.3 of a second longer before shooting
half
that
a
shot.
Second, yep.
Those people walking behind him would have been blocked by his body.
Yes.
See the difference?
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, you know, I always go on all the time. The difference between a good and a really good photo is 5%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That 5% was half a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you can see there's some strange distortion going on with his head in that shot simply because the angle you're shooting
so close
at.
And to him. Yeah.
Yeah, the angle he's shooting at and the obviously the properties of that lens have a bit of distortion on the edges. Have you tried putting does Darktable have lens
correction? Yes, it does.
Correct. Yeah. Have you tried doing anything there?
I'd not even considered that.
It's worth having a look at. There might be a whole episode there for you in your Darktable
podcast. Right.
Because that's really important stuff to yeah. to look at for, you know, if it can fix known problems with lenses pretty quickly, then you know, it's a nice part of your workflow.
Yeah, for sure.
To me, this is always the great challenge of the random stranger in the street photography, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it's absolutely thrilling when it comes off.
Yeah.
You know, when you get it, you know. And I said my goal per year is 6 to 10 photos that I love.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might go an entire tour in an incredible place and not get one photo that I love.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's yeah, you know, I'll get lots that I like, lots that other people like, but not that I love.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so my standards, my demands on myself are fairly high,
yep.
as they probably should be. But when it happens, when it all comes together and you look, and that's when you can truly chimp on the back of your camera. So, damn well, it doesn't happen often when it finally does, you know.
Yeah.
But who made that photo happen, Bruce? You did.
Yeah.
That photo didn't exist without you taking a chance, without you being in the right spot, without you bothering to ask, without you setting him up, without you getting close enough with the all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what's thrilling. A landscape, to me, landscape photography is not thrilling because I have very little say in how good the photo is.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The sunrise may suck. There may be no clouds. The sunset may, all this, you know, I can compose the photo, but if the light sucks, the photo's going to suck.
Yeah.
But in this type of people photography in the street, if it works, it works because I made it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got the opportunity every time I go out to shoot to make it work. Now, most of the time it doesn't to its absolute best.
Yeah.
But everyone that's really good or just good, you still had the control that make that happen. And to me, that's the thing I love the most about photography is that ability that's my art that made it work, not the building was really cool, so I took a photo, a nice angle of somebody's architecture. I didn't take a nice photo of a landscape. And I love a good landscape, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
I don't get the thrill of photography from taking good photos of it.
As you've been talking, it's made me think about that whole thing. And the thing about a landscape is, and we saw this in just two episodes ago where two guys took almost an identical photograph because they shot at almost the same moment in time, albeit from 100 meters apart, but with long telephoto lenses looking at the same lighthouse. And you could argue that with any great landscape, anybody else who was there at the same time could have captured the same image.
Yeah.
But you look at any one of these images from my Mardi Gras night, there is no way another person could have got the same shot.
Exactly.
In any one of those images.
You created unique art.
Well.
You do. Hey, yeah. There's no other way to put it. Yeah. Most of it might be crap, but it's still unique. You're the only person that
no one else captured.
I love it if I'm driving down the street in the country somewhere, and I see a bird swoop down and pick something, you know, like an eagle or a hawk or something, fly down and scoop something out of a field, and I'm the only one in the car. I'm looking around, I'm the only person in the world that saw that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You're the only person in the world that captured that moment in time. That guy looking over his shoulder with a smile on his face, looking up at the people in the window having a laugh.
Yeah.
That moment, bang, that's yours and yours only.
Yeah.
And that's the super cool thing about it, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's where, for what floats my boat in photography, that's where the reward is.
Yeah.
You know? And interacting with people is kind of fun when you're out as well anyway.
Totally.
Yeah, it adds another bit of depth to the whole thing. So awesome stuff.
Yeah.
I don't reckon we're even going to talk about any articles tonight. We're just going to talk about photography tonight, Bruce. We're going to make it a photography episode.
Well, I actually wanted to say, and I didn't put it on the list, but I was absolutely tickled when you made a comment on an image that I posted to my Instagram account the other day, which was a black and white close-up of a steam train.
Yes, brilliant.
So thank you for the kind words. I really appreciated that.
But see, here's the thing. So I'll go into that. So, yeah, I critique very heavily, as you know.
Sure.
You know, it's serious, but it's in jest. Yeah, the harshness is because I know I can do it to you and we have a laugh about it, you know. And there's no malice behind what I say to you, even though most of your shit stuff's crap. But at the same time, if I know that when I say something that I say a positive thing about people's photos, it's because I genuinely mean it. I will never say anything nice about someone's photo unless I really mean it.
Yeah.
And the tones you brought out in that black and white.
Yeah.
Oh, sublime. They were just beautiful tones. The texture of that black and white. The subject matter was, yeah, it was okay.
It's just a still life. That's all it is.
It's just a wheel of a steam train. You've seen a million of them.
Yeah.
But the beautiful tones, the way the light was used, and the way that you can almost feel the texture in the black and white. You can almost reach out and touch that steel. It looks like steel. It's got this
beautiful.
No, it's gorgeous,
Yeah.
And that's what was great about it.
And the funny thing is, I for the last 5 years since I took that photo, I've only ever had it as a colour image.
Wow.
And just in the last probably 4 weeks, I did an episode of my Darktable video series about all the different ways in which you can process black and white in Darktable, because there are multiple modules in which you can do various types of desaturation and, black and white transfer. And what had happened was I'd emailed the mailing list and said, hey, I'm going to do an episode about, creating black and white in Darktable. Love to hear from everybody. What are your, go-to modules and how do you do it? And somebody came back to me with a module that I never would have considered even looking at. And it's called the Color Zones module. And so you don't think of black and white, because this is a module designed for modifying color. But it has the capacity to desaturate and then adjust the lightness of various color zones. And so when I actually did the particular video in the video series, and I actually used this Color Zones module, I was like, wow, this actually does an amazing job of converting to black and white, because you can then hone in on any part of the color spectrum and lighten or darken those particular tones. And it gave you much more control than you would normally get over just something like a channel mixer, where it just gives you red, green, and blue.
Yeah.
So when you use a color channel mixer to do your black and white conversion, you can control how bright or dark the reds are, how bright or dark the greens are, and the same with the blues. This Color Zones module gave you the ability to target in on any particular part of the spectrum. And so ever since then, I've been like, wow, I really want to go back, and the images that I think will work well as black and white, so I want to go and reprocess them using this Color Zones module. And that was one of the first ones that I converted. And, I just looked at it. And as you say, you feel like you look at that and it just feels like steel. You look at it and it just has that grittiness to it. And, it just kind of blew me away.
Good on you.
Yeah.
You've almost, not really, but you've almost inspired me to want to look at Darktable. I actually did download it. I downloaded it a few weeks ago.
Right.
I think I turned it on.
Yeah.
And then I turned it off. Because the problem is, I'd have to watch your videos to learn how to use it.
You would.
And that opening angle with the camera lens, just my head in. The bad lighting, the angle shooting up your nose from the webcam thing, whatever it is you do.
See, I've changed now. Like if you look at some of the more recent stuff, I've got a much better angle on the camera. It's much higher.
We better start again then. Better record all them all over again.
Yes.
If you want more viewers, you gotta look prettier.
Yeah.
You gotta get some really nice lighting in there.
Yep.
Make yourself look pretty.
It does look much better now.
You're a fairly handsome rooster.
Thank you,
mate. You put a bit of decent lighting on yourself and a paper bag over your head, and people are going to start flocking. So here's a whole. You could do the whole thing. The bag man teaches you Darktable. Anonymous Darktable pod. So something that something's got to have. You could have. If you want to get to be an internet sensation, you could have a twist.
Yes.
Little. And that twist should be looking up your nose. Maybe I'll watch a video or two. I'm serious. You should go back and record all of them again.
Wow, that's a big commitment.
Yep.
Maybe when I exhaust my, if I feel like I've run out of content, maybe then I'll revisit them.
Yeah.
But you don't want to take those videos down, because they're part of the sequence. I've made it quite clear on many occasions on the video series. I've said, look, I do not consider myself to be an expert in Darktable. I'm just a guy who loves the software, and I'm doing what I can to share what I've learned in my 2.5 years with it. With
people, you should get in touch with them and see if they'll send you a free copy for the next one.
You know it's free software, don't you?
Maybe they'll send you a T-shirt.
I don't think they do merch.
Well, there's an opportunity for you.
Yeah. So
instead of I shoot raw, I process dark table.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get yourself a throw. Yeah. It's a big. That could be a hook for you. Don't put the bag over your head. Put a great big afro on your head that covers most of your face, and all you see is just the lips talking. It's just the afro man. Afro man teaches you dark table.
Maybe I should do it with my motorbike helmet on.
I think Afro Man. I'm not, I could get the beautiful backlighting. You know, some lovely rim lighting, golden rim lighting around the outside. The Afro would look really cool. And then you could do a series of videos called Lighting Afro Man. Yeah, you can show how you do lighting setups. I think you're missing a big opportunity. Have you reached 1,000 subscribers
mate,
yet?
I am well past 1,000 subscribers.
Really? Why? When we say well past?
I'm at 1,100 now. So here's the thing. You have to reach these two thresholds before you can monetize your channel, right? You've got to get 1,000 subscribers, and you've got to have 4,000 watched hours. And I passed the 4,000 watched hours probably 2-3 weeks ago, and I passed the 1,000 subscriber mark about 10 days ago. And I got the email saying, congratulations on your channel. You're doing well. You're doing great stuff. We'd like to invite you to become part of the YouTube Partner Program, the YPP. Click here to, you know, submit your channel for review. And then you read the fine print and it tells
you. And that's all your face.
It's actually a human curated review board.
Wow.
So it's not a computer making a decision as to whether or not to monetize your channel. It's actual real human beings looking at your channel and deciding whether or not you're worthy. And because of that, they say it can take up to a month before your review gets processed. And it, like I said, took about 10 days or thereabouts. And I got the email this morning saying, congratulations, your channel's been approved and your videos are now monetized. So, Bollinger and caviar on me, mate. You might be waiting 14 years for it to happen.
So we've got one other photography thing to talk about before we hang up this episode.
Do we?
We do. I sent you up some RAW files this week.
Oh, you did? So you did.
I did.
and you hated what I did.
If we go back in time, I think we mentioned on a podcast that I don't know how we got to it. That it's good to try and get somebody else to process your images to see how they see them. So I thought I'd send some up to you, and I sent some absolute crap ones to you.
They were challenging,
real hard work ones for you. Yeah. And so how did you find them?
Challenging. I think all of them were backlit, so the sun was either in the shot or only just out of the shot, but you were generally facing towards the sun. They were all landscapes, although you might argue that the last one was not a landscape because you had a guy who, you know, maybe took up 20% of the frame. So, yeah, they were very challenging to process. I used some highlight reconstruction for the areas of the sky where the sunlight had blown out to pure white. And I thought Darktable did a pretty decent job of that. It does not highlight reconstruction. I did color reconstruction. So where it detects that pixels have blown out to white, it looks for areas of color just outside the white pixels and then uses that color to try and fill in the white pixels. So it brings everything away from being a blown-out white to the colour that most closely surrounds that area. And I then used there's a new module that came out in Darktable 2.6, which came out at Christmas time, called the Filmic module, and it's designed to emulate the look of film. And essentially it works like a complicated version of a tone curve, but with about 8 different sliders that you can work with. So I used that. There's also in Darktable a module called the Zone System module. And it is based on the Ansel Adams concept of dividing the tonal range of your image up into blocks and then allowing you to stretch or compress each block so that you have, you know, finer control over different ranges of the tone within the image, which again, you could do with a tone curve if you put enough nodes on the tone curve. Yeah. So I used a combination of different modules within Darktable to process those images. And what I was aiming for was to push the highlights as far as I could without them clipping. In some instances, you did have clipped pixels and there was just nothing I could do about that. But I tried to bring them into range as much as I could. And then I tried to get the blacks to be black without clipping excessive amounts of black. And then, you know, I tried to accentuate the tonal range that was left into what I felt was the most dynamic for the images in question. And, I mean, it's very subjective. You know, you might not
like... after all that work, the photos still sucked.
Yeah. There you go. I'm only, for once, I'm only 50% responsible.
I did some work. I did probably variations of those in not those particular files because I'd never seen those before in my life.
Right.
Except probably when I shot them. On similar type, like that guy walking across, I've got a version of that which walks all over yours.
Right.
It was using, I think it was a combination of Photoshop and Nick software to make it look a bit more pretty.
Yeah, but Photoshop's going to give you a lot more flexibility.
So maybe you should post some of the before and after. Post a couple of the photos as JPEGs.
Sure.
As in the original photo, convert the original RAW without doing anything to it to a JPEG, and then you after do a couple of before and afters.
Sure. Of your images?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Put them in the show notes.
I don't mind people saying I take crap photos.
Sure.
To a lot of that.
Not a problem. Yeah.
Oh, well, so we've talked about photography. We've talked about our photography for an entire episode.
We have.
Should apologise again to everybody.
So have you shot anything in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I took some video of a concert I was at. I went to two concerts, two nights in a row, the same band. But I shot some video with my phone. And then I put it into Tiny Planet, you know, the Tiny Roll World, Planet, but with video. And so it gives you this animated kind of rolling world of wackiness, which is pretty cool. And I was at the concert with a friend of mine who's a musician.
Right.
And he goes, I want you to shoot my next single video using this effect. So that's on for a week or two's time, which is kind of funny. So then a couple of days ago, I'm in the lounge room. It's about 5:30. I think it might have been Sunday. I'm in the lounge room about 5:30 in the afternoon, and my youngest daughter walks in wearing all black, a black hat on sideways and sunglasses, stands there, poses with all this attitude, just goes, sup. Sup. So I looked at her and I said, I'll tell you what, sup. What's up is we're going to take some photos. So I grabbed my camera, took some photos. So she did a whole range of poses. She just had a pose all by herself. She came up with all these suggestions and poses and stuff. And threw out a little half-hour photo shoot with me and her. And that was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
It's nice to do that with your kids once in a while. And we got 4 or 5 images that are really cute.
Yeah, I liked a lot of what I saw. They were great.
Yeah, yes. And all her own poses, all her own. So she's completely mad.
Good on her.
So she's going for a screen test next Sunday, this Sunday.
For what?
Coming up. She said that she goes to a thing called Stage School, which is Victorian arts and drama and something like that.
Right.
Thing. So she goes and she learns acting, singing, dancing.
Right.
And part of the thing is they do screen tests for advertisers, for stage shows, for movies, extras, all that sort of stuff. So she's going to do a little show reel.
Yeah, nice. Awesome.
Yeah, so that's it. But that's the only photos of the concert, the band, the kiddo, and that's it. But I did finally get my Holy Tour, just got released yesterday, Holy Tour for March next year.
Cool.
It'll be an incredible trip. And I've also just putting together my final touches for the Pushcar Camel Fair Tour for next November, so November 2020. But I'm working with a new travel agent, and this guy's just absolutely awesome. He can kind of make anything happen.
Right.
So on the Pushkar Camel Fair, which is a fairly big place, and you're there for long periods of time, the problem happens is you go up there for sunrise, then you go back to your hotel for breakfast, and then you might have a little bit of downtime there, then go back into the fair, back to the hotel for lunch, back out again for the sunset, back to your hotel. It's a lot of back and forth. It's not easy to get in and out. It takes a bit, half an hour, 45 minutes each way.
Right.
So it's a bit of a pain. So he says, we'll get our own marquee set up on the showgrounds, in the fairgrounds. So we have our own marquee there on the hill overlooking the fair, and then you come in, we'll use it as a base, you'll have your own chairs, your own drinks, your own staff to look after you. Then you come in, then everyone comes there for lunch, and whilst you're having lunch, we'll have some snake charmers and some dancers come and do a show for you.
Awesome.
It's like hello. Where were you when I was getting married?
Yeah, that's great.
so it's pretty awesome. Yeah, pretty darn awesome. So wow. It's got some great potential for a whole bunch of – and also we're doing something I've never done before. I'm doing this for both the Holi tour and the Pushkar tour next year, is we're going one evening, instead of going to a restaurant, we're going to somebody's it's kind of a restaurant house, and we do cooking lessons, and we learn how to cook some dishes, and then we eat those. So nice. That's kind of a whole new sort of culinary experience to add to the tour.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so if anyone's interested in either of those tours, the Holi one's already announced. Holi is the most we go into a place called Vrindavan in Mathura, which are two little towns, which is the epicenter of Holi in India. And Holi is the colour festival with the powder. It's the craziest fun you could possibly have with a camera in your hand. It is absolute madness. The itinerary I've got this time around. Because last time we went without a group to try and figure it out ourselves. It was too hard to work out. I think the itinerary at this time is killer. I can't wait to go and do it.
Nice.
We're going to be hitting some amazing stuff. So
awesome.
Yeah. So if anyone wants any info, drop me a line. I'm only taking six people to Holi just to keep it under control.
Because
the festival does get a bit nuts.
Yeah.
So on the two crazy days of Holi, there'll be myself as the tour leader. We'll have our tour guide, but we're also having a security guard.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned for the benefit of the females.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or even for the males, just to keep an eye on people to help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just an added person to help. If someone gets separated, you'll have a 3-2 ratio. It's going to be fabulous. So
yeah, nice.
It's going to be too much fun. All that. So you get, I think it's like 11 days, all accommodation, all meals, internal flights, access to all the venues, all the photography fees, all tips to hotel staff and drivers, everything, me. $59.95 US.
So they get a discount for you, right?
Well, yeah, otherwise it'd be like it'd be like 10,000.
Be twice the price without you.
It's $59. So that's like about $4,500 American, something like that. So and all you can do is get your own airfare there and pay for your own drinks and visa, and that's it. Yeah. So it's going to be an amazing trip. Get in touch. But that's it. I've been busy working this week. That's the problem with having the wife home.
Can't bludge.
Naps have been short on short supply. Keep encouraging you to go out and you'll feel better if you're out at a cafe doing your work, honey. You'll be motivated.
There's a Starbucks just down the corner.
Exactly.
You'd be so much happier there.
That is all I have to talk to you about.
Well, the interesting thing is that there was only three other things that I had on the list, and so I will just put the links in the show notes for anyone that wants to go and check out those stories that we didn't actually get to cover. So,
yeah, I had a bunch, but I can't be bothered talking about them because they surely weren't very important.
Right.
But there might have been. Let me have a quick double check. I think there might have been one thing there that was no.
There you go. Well, I'll put those links in the show notes as well, so you can go and see how uninteresting they were for yourself.
we'd like people to vote for this episode. If you like us actually talking about photography rather than about whatever else we normally talk about, give us a like on our Facebook page.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, mate, will you have a good week?
I will.
And I'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Yep. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Shutters Inc. Another audio to you.com quality podcast. For questions, comments and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.